All right, we're beginning here on the bottom of Lamed Hey Amud Bet by the two dots, Veshemen Shelehen. We're talking about the items that are listed in the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says these things were Asur Bechila V'Shtiyah, but not Asur Behana'ah. Amongst those items that are listed there, we saw Chalav Akum, which we discussed yesterday, as well as Pat Akum. And now we're up to Hashemen Shelehen, the oil that was made Asur as well. Shemen Rav Amar Daniel Gazaralav. The Gezerah actually stems from the time of Daniel, and not from the time of the Chachamim. Ushmol Amar, Shmol says that it was Zlifatan Shel Kelim Tmeim Usartan. The way Rashi explains Zlifatan over here is Plitatan Shepotan, that the utensils, Zud, Mezi'in Shamnunit Isur Shebal'u. So the oils that are placed into these utensils become Tamei, and that's what made them Asur. Tuma and Tahara is a very particular need for individuals who eat everything ala Tahara, or for particular times of year. It's not something that is for the Hamon Am, so why would you put a Takana in place because of Tuma? Ela zlifatan shel kelim asurin osartan. The problem here is not of Tuma, but Tuma in the sense of Isur. The Torah many times uses the word Tuma to describe non-kosher animals, because they are both mitamei, and they are also asur be'achila, and the isur achila brings a tumah to the individual who eats or consumes such items. So here we're speaking about the utensils of the goyim, and that the oil that is placed in them will then absorb from the flavor that is in the walls of these kelim, and then that isur will be present in the shemen, and that was what the problem was. So Rashi says that's what the meaning of zlifatan is. If you look at the Bali Tosafot at the bottom of the previous amud, he brings the explanation that Rashi brings, Venire, Shoto Plita Ba'am Mikoach, Hashemen Sheiriku Mikli Ha'Isur. And when they pour in or they pour out the Shemen to this Kli of Isur, that's going to cause it to absorb the flavor. But the Balei Tosafot then question that and say, Lashon Ziluf Tzat Kasha. The Lashon of Ziluf is not generally used for absorption or pulling something out. Shalom Matzinu Ziluf Rak Lashon Shficha. That the Ziluf is usually to pour on or to sprinkle on, which is what we find by, for instance, matting down the dirt in the house, that they use Ziluf. Or for sprinkling wine on something, they call it Ziluf. Shficha, or sprinkling, is usually the way the word Ziluf is used. So Rashi uses it as, it's the exuding of the Kli itself. That's what he calls the Zlifa, from the Kli into the Shemen. On the other hand, it sounds like from the Balei HaTosafot that it's the other way around, it's the Shficha. It is the pouring of the Shemen into the Kli that is the problem. That's what the word Ziluf means. But here you have a Machloket Rav and Shmuel as to the origins of this Isur of Shemen or Shemen Akum. Rav says it's a much more kadum, early type of Takanah Gzerah from the time of Daniel. Shmuel says it's a later Gzerah that is associated with the Isurim that are absorbed by the Shemen when it's placed into the utensils of the Akum. Amalei Shmuel the Rav. According to me, who says that it was a zera or takana that was put in place because of the absorption that the oil has from these kelim that have isur in them. And he brings this drasha from Rabbi Simlai. Shemen, Rabbi Yehuda, ubeitino nimnu alav. Shemen, Rabbi Yehuda, and his beitin got together and made a decision, vehitiruha. And they said it's no longer applicable. Kasavar, notein tam lifkam, mutar. That's because they believe that when a flavor is given that is detrimental or that is problematic, then that's not an issue with regards to notein tam or flavoring of another item. Eladidach, according to you, Rav, damar Daniel, gazar alav, gazera stems from the time of Daniel. Daniel Gazar, Vahata Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Umevatale, and then Rabbi Yehuda, it really probably should be Nisiyah. This goes back to the Machloket in the Mishnah yesterday as to what's found there, but likely it's Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah, who is the grandson of Rabbi, who the Rishonim here attribute this to. So Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah Mevatale, how could it be that he is undermining something that Daniel put in place? Vatnan, don't we have a Mishnah? Ain Beitin Yochol Vatel Divrei Beitin Chaviro. That the Beitin can only undermine that which an earlier Beitin did if they are greater than them in wisdom and in number. The assumption of the Gemara in general is that maybe in number they could exceed them, but bechuchmah that wouldn't happen. And basically it makes it a moot point that you can never really undermine something that was done by a previous Beitin because by definition, Yiridata Dorot, there won't be a Beit Din that is Godol b'chokhma u'b'minyan. And so then how could it be that you here are undermining that which was put in place by Daniel? Now, Shmuel's statement belies in it the fact that he thinks that they could undermine it when it was his reasoning, which is that even though it was a takana gzera of a previous Beit Din, that takana can be undone, which is interesting because why should that be? Isn't Shmuel bound by the same Mishnah that we have over here, which is that if it's a Beit Din gadol mimeno chokhmah minyan, then it can undermine it, otherwise not? Where does Shmuel have the Beit Din that does that? The Baal Tosafot over here explained that Shmuel is explaining the reason behind this Isur, and that it really is standing on two pillars. It says, Lekach nira l'ri, Shmuel nami svirle, chi gozer Beit Shemayim Beit Hillel al Hashemen, that even when Beit Shemayim Beit Hillel put in the Gzer of the Shemen, we're going to see in a couple minutes that it was amongst the 18 Takanot of Gzerot that Beit Shemayim Beit Hillel put in place at the end of the first parak in the Gemara and Shabbat. Those 18 Takanot of Gzerot, amongst them was this Gzer of Shemen. So that means, first of all, it's a very early Takana, and number two is that it's very hard for Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah to unwind something like that. So he says, "V'nir l'ri d'shmol nami svirle d'chik gazur beit shemay beit hilal l'shemen mishum chadnot gazur." He agrees that it was because of intermarriage. Umi umishum d'lo shaykh b'chadnut kol kach k'mo b'yayin. There, by shemen, it's not such a pivotal item in what you're going to worry about chadnot. When he's talking about wine, that's a social drink. That's the thing that is moshech the lev, brings closeness between parties. It's a thing that you do when you socialize. So that makes sense that when you say yayin is mishum chadnot. But shemen, that by itself would not be enough of a reason or a sufficient reason. And therefore, chutzrach lahem sa'ad. They needed an additional reason behind it. Because lifatam shel kelim asurim. And that's what Shmuel is describing over here. There was this secondary reason behind it. That notein dam lifgam afagav dinu svir lehu ba'alma. So even though in general they believe notein tam lifgam is mutar, b'chein sover Shmuel, and Shmuel himself believes that, mikoach shnei atamim gazru, afo pish ein dai b'chol echad levado. So even though each one independently would not have been enough to institute the gzerah, the combination of the two of them allowed them to put this into place. So that's why Shmuel says, first of all, what the reason is, even though we have another reason, which is Mishum Chatnut. He's saying that Mishum Chatnut by itself would not have been sufficient, and therefore you need the other reason, which is Notein Tam. Now, the problem with Notein Tam is that we generally believe Notein Tam Lifgam is Mutar, that a flavor that after a certain point deteriorates, that deterioration in the flavor, then even if it's imparted to the other object, doesn't make it Asur. Only after 24 hours, we believe that the Tam already has been degraded, and therefore it's not something that causes isur. Despite the fact that we believe notein tam lifgam is mutar, and the fact that this isn't really so much an issue of chadnut, if we combine the two, then we get a reason that's sufficient to put it into place. Now you have to explain, why is it that according to Shmuel, it's a given that you can unwind it? Other Rishonim, like the Raiv, would suggest over here, when you have a gzerah that is put in place, that rests on svara, on a logical reason, like over here, which is the logical reasons or the basis for it are mishum chadnut, and that are mishum notin tam lifgam, sur, then a Beit Din that succeeds, that Beit Din can undermine it based on svara, because there, the requirement is not a requirement of a halachic process by which there was a gzerah takana put in place and you want to unwind it, which is mentioned by the Mishnah, but rather simply the Beit Din that instituted left almost like a window or a door in it by saying that it's premised on this logical argument. So therefore, this logical argument makes it that you have the right to undermine it or to unwind it when you believe that the logic underlying it is incorrect. And that's what the case is here. That notein tam lifgam was something they assumed either was a sore, or even though it was mutar, they were gozer anyway. And then that's when Shmuel comes along and says that notein tam lifgam is mutar, and that's why they could have unwound that which was done by the Beit Din that preceded them. And the Baal Tosafot, on the other hand, say the fact that it was built of these two reasons, that each one in of itself were not sufficient, that's why Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah thinks that he can unwind it, because he thinks that neither of these reasons are sufficient in of themselves. And therefore, he thinks that it's okay to unwind it, or that there is an opening to unwind it in this case. The Gemara is going to explain in a minute that that's what he did. Amarle, so Rav says back to Shmuel, Simlai lo da'ak amart. You're speaking about Rav Simlai from Lod. Lod was known as a city that was not so compliant with keeping the halachot. And therefore he says, Shani lo da'ai de mezalzulu. Lo da'ai in general are mezalzul and isurim. And therefore he says that Rav Simlai is who's suggesting over here that Rav Yehuda obeit dino nimnu alav hitiru, which is where we have the Mesorah from. He's not so reliable because it comes from Lod, and the people of Lod in general were mezalzel in halachot. Amarlei, Eshlachlei, he says, should I send it to him? Now you could look at this in one of three ways. Eshlachlei means, should I send him what you said about him? Rav Simlai lo da'a is mizalzel in halachot, and that's why he has a mesorah like that? That's one possibility. Another possibility is, Eshlachlei, should I find out whether this is his own mesorah, or whether he has this mesorah from someone else? Or a third way to read it is, Eshlachlei, should I inquire of him as to whether it's true, that that's what he said? Ichsif, Rav was embarrassed, because he knew that this is what Rav Simlai was saying, and it probably was correct. But Rav didn't want to abide by it because he felt that he didn't have the right to undermine a din that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel had put in place, or according to Rav, that Daniel had put in place. And therefore, he was upset that he was making it into a heter. And over here, Rav wanted to maintain the Isur of Shemen. The Balei Tosafot bring from the Yerushalmi that actually Shmuel prevailed on Rav and forced him to abide by the heter over here. He says, if you continue to be machmir on yourself, then I'm going to declare you a zakin mamre. I'm going to send it to Eretz Yisrael and have them declare you a zakin mamre. And therefore he prevailed upon Rav to release the shemen based on the mesorah that they get from Rav Simlai that Rabbi Yehuda Nesiah and his Beit Din had been matirin, and that Rav should be kafuf to the Beit Din in Eretz Yisrael, that is the central authority in this matter, and that he should accept it. Even though generally when someone is machmir on themselves, that's their own choice and we don't stop them. Two things here. One is Rav is a gadol ador, and that's going to have impact on individuals. And in a second, we're going to see this was a gzeira or takana that the tzibor could not be omeid ba, could not maintain. And therefore, it was inappropriate that Rav would continue to press this gzeira forward when the people themselves were unable to keep this gzeira. Amar Rav, imhem lo darshu, anan lo darshina, just because they were not doresh the pasuk, that the fact that it comes from Daniel means that we shouldn't be doresh the pasuk. Vaktiv, doesn't it say in Daniel, by the same Daniel alibo, asher lo itga'al, bepat bag hamelech ubiyein mishtav. Daniel, who is in service of the Babylonian king, he took to heart that he did not want to be defiled bepat bag hamelech by the bread of the melech. The Balei Tosafot say, perish hayresh bam dai pat la pat mamashu. That pot cannot be literally pot, because then you would have suggested that Daniel was gozer la pat as well. That means that pat akum and Shemen Akum, according to Rav, would have come from Daniel. Why did he only mention Shemen? But rather he says that the pot here means liftanhu. It means a side dish or something that accompanies the bread. That is what would be Bishol Akum. Pat Bag means the portion that was given by the king or assigned to the individuals. This is the king's gift to those that service the king. So that was a Pat Bag HaMelech. While others say that it really is literally pot that was brought here, which will lead to a machloket, which we will discuss tomorrow, about the origins of these different takanot, pat akum, shemen akum, and yain akum. But also it says, ubiyein mishtav, and the wine of his drinking, shtei mishtaot akatuv midaber. It says mishtav in plural, which indicates that these are two drinks or two liquids the pasuk is speaking about. Echad mishte yain, echad mishte shemen. One of them is wine, one of them is shemen. In that way, Daniel desisted from taking the oil or the wine that was assigned to him or given to him from the king because of the problem of Yein Akum or Shemen Akum. Rav Savar, Ali Bo Sam, Olochol Yisrael Horeh, that he took to heart this matter, and then he dictated to the rest of Klal Yisrael that that was the way to be. This wasn't just the chumrah of Daniel on himself. This is the way that Daniel behaved. But then he actually instructed the remainder of Bnei Yisrael to abide by that. Shmuel Savar Ali Bo Sam, he took it to heart. Olochol Yisrael Lo Horeh. It was a personal thing that he did, but it wasn't something that he dictated to everyone else. And then the Gemara asks, V'shemen Daniel Gazar, did Shemen really come from the Gzeira of Daniel? The truth is, and the Balei Tosafot note this as well, which is, he could have asked him, did Daniel really gozer al yayin? Because over here, the way that Rav's reading the psukim in Daniel, not only was Daniel gozer al shemen, but he was also gozer al hayayin. Even pat seems to be possibly derived out of that pasuk. Although again, we saw that Rashbam dismissed that. Patvag doesn't mean necessarily bread in the sense of a pot, but in the sense of a portion that was brought from the king. But nevertheless, you do see that Yayin and Shemin are mentioned there. That means, according to Rav, both Yayin and Shemin derive from Daniel. When I asked about Shemin, Tosafot said, and they could have asked about Yayin as well. Vahamar Bali of Yime Nota'a, Mishmei Derav, Pitan, Ushmanan, Yenan, Ubnotehem, Kulan Mishmonasar Davarhem. All of these, Takanot, Gzerot, Patakum, Shemenakum, Yenakum, and Benotehem, all of those came up in those 18 items that they were gozer in the time of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. B'chitema ata Daniel gazar velo kibel. So what do you want to suggest now? That Daniel put it in place, but it was not accepted by the people. V'atu tamidei Hillel v'shammai gazur v'kibel. And then the Talmidim of Hillel and Shammai went and instituted it, and it was accepted with the people. Imkein mas asudutei derav. And what is the point of Rav's memra before? Rav started out the sugya here saying that Shemen came from Daniel. Well, that's completely irrelevant because it wasn't accepted in the time of Daniel. Rav's statement is meaningless because he's saying now it was accepted in the time of Hillel and Shammai. Ella, Daniel gazar lav ba'ir. Daniel was gozer on Shemen Akum in the city. Ba'atu inu v'gazur afilu b'sadeh. According to the Bali Tosfot, this might be the same thing with Yayin as well, with Yayin Akum as well. Daniel's Gzerah in the origin was about the cities, because that's where the issues of socializing and intermarriage would come up, because that's something that brings them together, because they're in constant contact with each other. And then Basadeh, he said, let it go, because that's an area where everything's akrai. It's a happenstance. It happens to be that they met up there. It's not something that develops relationships. Va'atu inu. And then Talmidei Hillel and Shammai came along, Gazur afilu Basadeh, that said that it would be asur legamre, not only in the city, but also out in the fields. The Gemara is now faced with the difficult challenge, which is Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Heichi Matzi the Mishra Takanto the Talmidei Shammai v'Hillel. If that's the case, how is Rabbi Yehuda Nasi undermining or overriding a takana that came from the Talmidim of Shammai v'Hillel? Over here already the Bali Tosafot say, Perish Rashbam, the Parach ben the Rav uben the Shmuel. But this question is not only on Rav, this question is on Shmuel as well, which is, how did he really do this? Because Shmuel before assumed that it was from Daniel, it would be problematic, but it was from the later times, it wouldn't have been so problematic to override it or have Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and his Beit Din override it. So here, the Rashbam says the Gemara is coming back now and challenging Shmuel as well and saying, how did he do this? There are other Rishonim who believe Shmuel does not have this problem. This is really an issue for Rav solely, and that Shmuel already solved the problem because of the way that he designed the Takana or Gzeirah as being a Gzeirah that was either built on Svara or built on dual items, so therefore it wasn't a single reason, and it was a weaker takana to start with. And he doesn't subscribe to Rav's contention that was just quoted here, that it's amongst the 18 items that were Nigzari Dei Tamidei Hillel v'Shammai. In that case, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi wasn't going up against Daniel, nor was he going up against Tamidei Hillel v'Shammai. But the way that Rav has it, it's a stronger takana, and therefore this is the question only on Rav and not on Shmuel. Batnan. Then we have the Mishnah, which we quoted earlier, Ein Beitin Yachol Levatel Divrei Beitin Chaviro, Elim Ken Gadol Amenu B'Chuchma, Beu B'Minyan, so that we already discussed. Ve'od, Amar Rabba Barbachana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, B'chol Yachol Levatel Beitin Divrei Beitin Chaviro, Chutz Mishmonasar Davar. Any Beitin can come and override an earlier Beitin statement, except for the 18 things, Shafilo Yavo Eliyahu Beitino, Ein Shomim Lo. That even if Eliyahu and Avi comes and sets up a Beit Din Latid Lavo, we won't listen to him. We will not undermine those 18 things that were instituted by Talmidei Hillel v'Shammai. First of all, they have a certain amount of tokef because they were instituted earlier. Number two is that the Gemara says about them that they came to fisticuffs over it. There was a lot of fighting about the Shmonasar Davar, even to the point of Sakanat Nefashot, and therefore since people risk their lives, in a sense, to put these into place, we're not going to unwind them. They take on a special status or a unique status. While others say the unique status of the Yudchet Davar comes from, and as we'll see in a second, either because it's spread throughout Klal Yisrael, or the Rambam claims, when is that true that a Beit Din of a greater Chokhmah Minyan is allowed to overturn a previous Gzera Takana? That is in a case, Shlo Asru Otan Kedei Lasot Seyag the Torah. Only if they didn't do it in order to create a fence or protection of the Torah. El Kishar Dinei Torah. But that's with any other type of Gzera Takana. Advarim Shehu Beit Din Legzor Ula Osram Lasot Seyag. Institutions that were put in place, like the 18 items that were put there to create Seyagim the Torah, in Pashat Yisurim, if they were accepted by a rove Klal Yisrael, then a Beitin Gadol Acher Yachol Akran. Then even a Beitin of greater stature can't undermine them or overturn them, even if they were greater than the institutors of the Gezerah. Amar Rav Misharshia Matam, what's the reason? Holu Pashat Yisuro Berov Yisrael. The Isur or Isurim spread out to all of Klal Yisrael. Shemen lo pashat Yisro berov Yisrael. When it comes to oil, that did not expand to all of Klal Yisrael. So then the reason in Shemen that he was able to undermine it, even though he was a lower Beit Din, was b'shemen lo pashat Yisro berov Yisrael. That is the dispensation because it was not spread amongst all of Klal Yisrael. Dama Rabbi Shmuel Baava Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Yeshvu Rabotenu batku ashemen shlo pashat Yisro berov Yisrael. They did a Seker, they did some sort of poll or survey about whether people were keeping the Isser of Shemen or not, and they realized that people were not keeping the Takana or the Gzerah of Shemen. It hadn't spread, it hadn't taken hold, or was not being complied with by Rov Yisrael. So the question is here, Rav Misharshia's statement, is that modifying the 18 Davar, or is that a statement in general about Isurim? So the Balei HaTosafot actually take both approaches. They first of all speculate in one way. It seems that Rav Misharshia is explaining why Shemen lo pashat Yisro berov Yisrael, and that's why you were allowed to then undermine it, because it never took hold. But that means that Rav Misharshia is then explaining why the 18 items are not allowed to be undermined, because they were taken by all of Klal Yisrael. Which would then imply that when it comes to other Gzeirot or Takanot, if they were Pashat Bechol Yisrael, then they'd be irreversible. On the other hand, if they were not Pashat Bechol Yisrael, then even a Beit Din of a lesser stature could undermine those items. And that's what it's being explained over here by Rav Misharshia, that Shemen was not Pashat Bechol Yisrael, and that's why it was allowed to be overturned even by a Beit Din of lower stature. But that means that there are really only two categories of Gezerot or Takanot, those that are Pashat Bechol Yisrael, and those that are not Pashat Bechol Yisrael. There are variations of that view, including the Tosfot Shantz, who suggests that maybe the Pashat Bechol Yisrael is only limiting and makes it irreversible when you're speaking about Isurim, like the Yudchet Davar. But when it comes to Davar Sheba Mamon, monetary matters, over there you would have more latitude to overturn them if you had a Beit Din that was of a higher stature and minyan than the original Beit Din that put it into place. And then, if it was not Pashat B'chol Yisrael, even a Beit Din of a lower stature could undermine it. But there are others that view Rav Misharshia is not explaining why the Yudchet Davar unique, that we already noted before, either because they were She'amdalahem b'nafshotehem, that it was something that reached life-threatening proportions, or what we mentioned in the Rambam, that is of a harchoka nature. And that's what makes the Yudchet Davar unique. And that's why they can't be overturned by any Beit Din, even a Beit Din of Eliyahu and Avi. But where Misharshia is coming to explain is why Shemen unique. And in doing so, he also then helps you understand the status for other Gezerot or Takanot. And that is, when it comes to Shemen, it is not a member of the Yudchet Davar, even though it was Mitukan at the same time, because it was Lo Pashat B'chol Yisrael. It did not take hold in all of Klal Yisrael, and therefore was dropped out of the 18 item. But that means that any Takana or Gzera that was Pashat B'chol Yisrael, if it's not a member of the Yudchet Davar, then you do have a right to undermine it or override it if you have a Beit Din that's greater B'chokhmah U'minyan. That means now that you've created three categories instead of the two before. That is the category of the Yudchet Davar that cannot be overturned for any reason. There's another category of Gzerot or Takanot that if they were Pashat B'chol Yisrael, then they can be overturned, but only with a Beit Din that's greater b'chokhmah minyan. And then you have a third category, which is Shelo Pashat B'chol Yisrael. And Shelo Pashat B'chol Yisrael now permits you not only to overturn it, but to overturn it with a Beit Din that is Katan, because it doesn't Pashat B'chol Yisrael. Although the Balei Tosafot in their conclusion suggests that Shelo Pashat B'Yisrael is only significant or enough to get it out of the Yudchet Davar, that in and of itself would not be enough to undermine it with the Beit Din Shekatan from the ones that instituted the Gzerah, but you actually need something else on top of that. And that we already saw in the Balei HaTosafot before, the possibility that it was premised on two reasons that each of them by themselves wasn't sufficient. So you put that together with Shelo Pashat B'Yisrael, and that gave enough power to undermine it. Or we're going to see others who suggest, and that is the conclusion of the Balei HaTosafot, which is that the next line in the Gemara is what permitted Rabbi Yehuda Nissian's Beit Din to undermine it, which is that those in combination allow you to undermine it with the Beit Din Shekatan Mimeno. Whereas the Tosfot Shan suggests over here that even with just the reason Lo Pashad B'Kol Yisrael, that would be sufficient to allow a Beit Din that was Katan, like Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, to undermine it. And the reasoning brought here of Ein Gozrim Zera Tzibor and Kimrov Tzibor Yecholim Mod Ba was the reason the Gemara is giving why Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya chose the route of not reinforcing the Gzera or trying to make it work, but rather dismissing the Gzera. And that's because they felt that it was flawed from the beginning. So they then relied on these statements that they can't be gozer on the tzibur something unless the majority of the people in the tzibur can abide by it or can keep it. So now the question is, how separate is that from the reason that we just said before? Is that one reason? Or is that another reason? So Tosfot at first suggests they are one reason. If Rav Yisrael is not keeping it, that's evidence of the fact that it was something that the Tzibur could not be omeg ba. So that's one way to learn it. And then the Tosfot runs into a problem with that. And then he backs away from that and says there are actually two different reasons. There's one reason, which is Rav Yisrael is not abiding by it. And there's a second reason, which is whether it was a gzerah that the Tzibur could be omeg ba. And the two don't have to necessarily be synonymous. They could be separate reasons. And that's when he then discusses the issue of Prusbol, that Shmuel himself said that if I was strong enough, or if I had the capacity to, I would have unwound the dictator Takanav Prusbol that Hillel put in place. He says that Prusbol and Hidalo Pashat, that even though Prusbol was not taken up or widely spread and accepted by all of Klai Yisrael, it was something that Rov HaTzibur Yecholim La'amod Ba. It was something that the Tzibur could have kept because it was put in place for the benefit of the lenders. And they would definitely want it in place. And why wouldn't people keep Prusbol? It's only to their benefit to have Prusbol in place. Nevertheless, it didn't make its way out. And therefore, it was not Pashat B'Kol Yisrael. So in that understanding of the Bali Tosafot, they say when it's Lo Pashat B'Kol Yisrael, that's not enough to give you the dispensation to then wipe it out, because Shmuel says I need to be greater than Hillel in order to do it. So Lo Pashat B'Kol Yisrael is not enough by itself. You need Shlo Pashat B'Kol Yisrael and something else then in order to make it that it would be mutar. And here by the Shemen, you also have the additional item of that Rov HaTzibur Ein Yochlim La'amod Ba. And that's what gives the dispensation for Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya and his Beit Din then to dismiss that Gzerah or Takana. So that's what you have here now, three different levels of gzerot or takanot according to the Baalei Tosafot. Even if you have a Beit Din that's gadol b'minyan et chuchma, they can't undermine the yud chet davar. On the other hand, with other gzerot or takanot, if they take hold in all of Klai Yisrael, then you're going to need a Beit Din that's gadol b'minyan et chuchma minyan to undermine it. If they're lo pashat b'chol Yisrael, you'll still need a Beit Din that's gadol b'minyan et chuchma minyan. Elaim Ken, you have another reason that's associated with it. If you can bring another reason to bear, then you will also be allowed to undermine it, even with the Beit Din Yoter Katan. And that's what we have here with regards to the Shemen. Not only was it something that Rav Yisrael did not accept, it was also something that the Tzibur could not omeid ba. They could not stand by it, or they could not abide by it. And therefore, it was flawed or failed from the beginning. And that's why you can go back now and undermine it, even if you're a Beit Din like Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya and doesn't have the stature of those individuals who put it into place. Damar Rav Adarava, Mikra, what is the proof in the Pasuk to this fact? It says in the Haftorah that we're going to read for Shabbat HaGadol, Bime'ira atem ne'arim, you are bound by my curse or a curse, Boti atem kuvim, Hagoy kulo, entire nation is stealing from me, and that's because they're not giving the matnot that are supposed to be given to the Kohanim, to the Aniim, and Hashem is saying, who are you stealing from? You're not stealing from them, you're stealing from me, because that's my dictate, and that's my law, and you're stealing from me. So now the way they're darshin the pasuk is, b'meira atem ne'arim, you are bound by the takanot o the gezerah, oti atem kovim, and then you'd be in violation of my word, Hashem says, or stealing from me if you don't abide by it, hagoy kulo, eik hagoy kulo, if the entire nation is abiding by it, in, ilo, lo, if not, not. So that's what the Baalei Tosfot say over here. Perish, enu chala kishar gzerot. It doesn't take effect like other gzerot. V'yicholah litbatel. You have the right to undermine it. Af b'Beit Din katan. Even with a Beit Din that's not of the stature of the originating Beit Din. Miuchalahu l'inyan shetzricha shum heter. It doesn't just go away automatically. It just means that it's a gzerah or takana with reduced tokef. And that reduced tokef then allows you to intercede and negate it or nullify it, but it doesn't automatically go away. And that means that people want to be machmir for it, it's a good thing. And generally, if you have the option or capacity, you should abide by it until there is a heter brought about. That's what we discussed a little bit about patakum in yesterday's daf. Gufa. So now the Gemara goes back to the statement. Amar bali, amar avime nota mishmei derav. Pitan ushmanan yenan ubnoteem kulan mishmonasar davar hein. So all these items are part of the 18 takanot or gzerot that were put in place in the time of Talmidei Hillel v'Shammai that are mentioned at the end of the Gemara in Shabbat. Now the Gemara asks, Benotehem Maihi. What is the restriction of Benotehem? Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Gazru al Benotehem Nidot Mi'arisutan, that they instituted that the daughters of the Akum would have the status of a Nida from the time that they're in the crib, from the time that they are basically born, they'd have a status of a Nida. So first of all, in terms of Tumat Nida, there is no such Tuma by a Goya, or not by a kuti, as the Baitos would note over here. There's also a gzera like that by a kuti, separate gzera. But they instituted it in order to create distance between Klal Yisrael and the Akum. Ugneva mishmei derav amar kulam mishum avodat kochavim gazru behen. They all did it because of the problem of avodah zarah. It would draw the person into worshipping avodah zarah. That's the end game of all of these relationships that will bring a person to worship avodah zarah, which is tichata rav acha bar adam rav yitzchak gazru al pitan mishum shmanan. They were gozer on pat akum because of shemen akum. Mayome de shemen mipat. Why is shemen akum any better or more obvious to be gozer on it than pat akum? They're both essentials of a meal, essentials of a mishteh. Ela al pitan ushmanan mishum yenan. So they were gozer on pat and shemen because of wine. Vayenam mishum benotehem. And wine because of the daughters. Val medenotehem mishum davar acher. And the daughters because of something else, which is that we're afraid of intermarriage because intermarriage would lead to worshipping of avodah zarah. Val davar acher mishum davar acher. And then something else because of something else. And now the Gemara will go now and investigate what each of these items means, or what sequence that's here. So the first sequence is pretty clear, and that's what they brought here, that Rav said that it's all because of avodah zarah, which is that we're afraid of intermarriage, because intermarriage would lead to worshipping avodah zarah, and intermarriage would be precipitated by yayin, the socialization, and the alcoholic side of the yayin, and that's why they were mitakin by yayin, yayin akum is asur, and then in order to facilitate the ability of yayin akum to be asur, they also did pitan ushmanan, that they said that pat and shemen, to prevent a person from being in a situation where yayin akum would come up, they also made a takana that pat and shemen would also be restricted, so you'd never be in a situation when you're eating together. And the Ramban over here comments as to why this isn't classified as a gzera, the gzera. Either he said that etzam yayinam was a gzera atu b'notehem, whereas shemen b'pat was a gzera atu yayin nesech. It wasn't atu stam yenam, but rather atu yayin nesech. So therefore, it's not a gzera, the gzera. Although the Ramban doesn't love that reason, and therefore he brings the following additional reasons as to why this is not a problem of gzera, the gzera here. You could suggest by pat and shemen, there is a problem of chatnot, but that in itself would not have been sufficient if you didn't have yayin along with it. And so combining those two reasons together is what pushed us to make the gzera by pat and shemen. Or you could say, like the Gemara would suggest in other places, the olav daha, lokai maha, if we didn't put this institution into place, it would not keep the other one in place. Or the concept of ain't go drink gzera like gzera only applies when you're dealing with the Israel. But when you're dealing with issues vis-a-vis goyim, gazrin and tuva, we put in tons of gzerot and harchakot in order to distance ourselves or create boundaries between us and the akum. So now the Gemara says, binotehen. Over there, you're suggesting that the intermarriage is a takanat chachamim, deoraitahi. That is straight out of the Torah. Tichtiv lo titchatein bam. That you're not allowed to intermarry with the non-Jewish nations. So why is it that you need to have a takanat chachamim when it's an explicit isur deoraita? Now the Baal HaTos will say that there really is no isur of lo titchatein bam because the Gemara in Yevamot tells us lo titchatein bam is an isur of marrying a goya that converted, which means that even someone from the seven nations that converted, that individual, begeyutan, even after they convert, is asur to marry. And that's where the isur of lo titchatein bam applies. So that can't be what the Gemara is speaking about here. The Baal HaTosafot say that throughout Shas, the Gemara many times brings you the beginning of a pasuk, when it really wants you to look at the end of the pasuk. And that's what he says over here, that it's not really after lo titchatein bam, But rather the latter part of the pasuk, Ubitolo tikach lebincha, that you shouldn't take the other nations, individuals, as marriage partners for your children. That's what it's after, but not the actual Isser lo titchatein ba. Gemara answers, Doraita zayin umot. Min haTorah, the Isser is only about the seven nations. That's what the Balei Tosafot back on Daf Chof said, that when it comes to lo tichaneim, it sounds like that Isser of lo tichaneim only applies to the seven nations. So then, is there a broader application of that? And there the Balei Tosafot go through that many of the halachot that are found in those psukim in Devarim Zayin are about the seven nations, with the exception of lo tichaneim, that the Balei Tosafot says applies to Akum in general, despite the fact that every other halacha there applies to only the seven nations. And this is one of those examples where the Gemara says, lo titkatein bam, or the other Yisroim that are found there only apply to the Zayin Umot. It doesn't have application there. They came and instituted that even other Ovdei Kochavim would be under the same rubric as the seven nations. So then what are you going to say over there? That the Psukim there give a reason why it is that you can't intermarry is because ki yasir bin chamei, because then your child will be taken away from me. That's a case where Jewish woman marries a non-Jewish husband, and the child that is born is Jewish, but he'll be taken away because he's going to be taken by the father towards avodah zarah. L'rabot kol hamisirot. Rabbi Shimba Yochai, who's darshin on time of dekra, in general, here he would have been doresh time of dekra even without the pasuk. But now with the pasuk, even other tanaim would agree to this. And the reason the Rashbam says we brought in the name of Rabbi Shimba Yochai is because we know that Rabbi Shimba Yochai is connected to this concept of darshin on time of dekra. But not that it's limited to him in this case, because it's explicit in the pasuk. Teach you that it's not only applicable to the seven nations, but it's applicable to anybody who would move your child away from Judaism. And that would be any non-Jewish partner. That would be the case. And obviously, as the Balei Tosafot will point out here, that this can only have application to the latter half of the pasuk, which is, Bitcha lo titen livno, bito lo tagkach livnecha, but does not reference back to lo titchatein bam. Because as we said before, lo titchatein bam is even after conversion, you're not allowed to marry them. That's one of the seven nations. There is no such restriction with regards to other nations. Never, Rabbi Shimon has to be just saying that it's a problem of intermarriage where the person is still not converted. That's where we have such a restriction. And that restriction is more broad than simply the Zayin Umot. It applies to other nations, and that's because the Torah went out of its way to give you the reason. And if it gives you the reason, then the reason is applicable more broadly than just the seven nations. Ela doraita ishut derech chatnut. The restriction min haTorah is to live with that woman or to intermarry in a way that is living like husband and wife. V'atu inu gazura filu derech znut. And the Chachamim came along and added on an additional gzera, that there's an isur, even when it's done in a way that's not marriage, but just derech znut. Znut, nami bebeit dino shel shame gazru. What do you mean? Znut was already instituted from the time of shame. Dichtiv, vayomer Yehuda, hotziyua v'tisaref. That by Tamar, where she's suspected by Yehuda of having znut, the Beit Din wants to take her out, be burnt at the stake. So here there are a number of underlying assumptions in the proof that they're bringing. One is that Shem's Beit Din was available or the adjudicator of the case, and they abided by Torah law. That's number one. Number two is that Tamar somehow was Jewish because either she converted or she was married into the Avot, and that's why she was subject to this penalty. And number three is that she was somehow deserving of Srefa, and that was the appropriate punishment. There are Midrash Sirei Chazal that are brought by Rashi and Chumash that say that Tamar was the daughter of Shem, and Shem was a Kohen, the Malki Tzedek that met Abraham. And given all of those pieces of the puzzle put together, they say that Tamar was subjected to this punishment because of Tamar suspected of Znot with a non-Jewish partner. And that's what brought her to this punishment. And so that is already something that was in force at the time of Shem. Ella, Doraita. Obviously, it's not Doraita. It's like Doraita. Oved kochavim abal bat Yisrael. That when it is a non-Jewish male that is together with a Jewish woman, the mashcha batrei, she's going to be pulled after him. Aval Yisrael abal vedet kochavim lo. But the other way around, where it's a male Jew and a female who's the oved kochavim, maybe that would not be the case. Batinu and gazur afil Yisrael abal vedet kochavim. That even for a Jew that interacts with the Novedic Kochavim, that would also be problematic. So here is the underlying assumption, which may not be true today, but in the time of the Gemara, was that the husband dictated the direction of the family, and you lived with the husband's family, and the husband was basically the one who determined the future religious content of the family. So there, if a woman got together with a non-Jewish man, we'd be afraid that that woman would be pulled and continue with that man and then be pulled to Avodah Zarah. Now then, if it's a Jewish man with a non-Jewish woman, that fear would not be there. So that's what the Gzeira was, to come and institute to restrict that type of behavior. Where it says, Yisrael abal vedet kuchavim alach lamoshe misinai. That's something already that we have from the time of the Torah. The Amar Mar, a boel aramit kanaim pogim bo. It's someone who sleeps with aramit, a non-Jewish woman, any kanai can come and kill them. That is the incident with Pinchas, where he asks Moshe Rabbeinu, what do we do with Kazbi Batsur and Zimri ben Salu? But Pinchas says, didn't you teach us kanaim pogim bo? And then Moshe says back to him, the one who remembered halacha should be the one who carries it out, and that's why Pinchas kills them. That's based on this halacha, boel aramit kanaim pogim bo. Where it says, it's only in public, like the incident that happened with Pinchas. Meaning, like the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, that it is limited to catching them in the act. Once they've separated already, there's no longer a din of kanaim pogimbo. Atuinu gazur afilu bitzina. They instituted that even in private, it would be problematic. Bitzina beit dino shel chashmonai gazru. Things that are in private, that's already put in place by the Beit Din of the Chashmonaim. Yichiyat Rav Dima Amar Beit Din Shel Chashmonai Gazru, that the Beit Din of the Chashmonaim were put into place a Gezerah, Yisrael Abal Ovedet Kochavim Chayav Mishum Nashko, and Yisrael that has a relationship with an Ovedet Kochavim is in violation of the following four Dinim Midrabanan, known as Nida, Shin is Shifcha, Gimel is Abudat Gililim or Agoya, and Aleph is Eshet Ish. So even though technically, none of these are real violations, midoraita, the Rabbanan instituted there would be such violations, midrabanan, and Rashi goes on to explain why each of these items might lead to something else that would be more problematic. For instance, if he sleeps with a non-Jewish woman who's in Nida, that would also bring him then to end up sleeping with a Jewish woman who's in Nida, even though one is not subject to the dinim of Nida, the other one is a chiyuv karet. So based on that, they instituted that you would get makat mardut for these four violations. Kiata Ravin Amar Mishum Nashgaz. So Rav Dimi brought the Masorah in this way. Ravin brought the Masorah from Eretz Yisrael that was Nashgaz, which is Nida, Shivcha, Goya, and Znut instead of Eshet Ish, which might have Nafkaminot with regards to a Kohen, whether the woman has the status of a Zona or not. That's discussed by Rashi in the Baal Yetos Sefot, where the Baal Yetos Sefot point out that an Ovedet Kochavim is seemingly deemed to be a zonah vis-a-vis a kohen, because a giyoret who converts, we assume she has the status of a zonah for the kohen. So that means that even when she's an ovedet kochavim, there is this concept or status of zonah. And that means that if a kohen slept with her, there'd actually be a problem of zonah, the oraita. And truthfully, that is the psak of the Rambam. The Rambam thinks that there is malkot here, midoraita. On the other hand, the Baal Yetos Sefot answer that that's only true if we know she had biyah, or we know so that she engaged in these types of relationships. But if we know nothing about her, and we don't know anything about biyah, we're not going to assume that she is a zonah. But Tosafot, in addition to that, asks, how is it possible that according to the one who says zonah, who says nashgaz, that zonah, not eshedish, that's because he doesn't believe that there's a din of eshedish by a goy. And the Baal Tosafot once again challenged that, because we find numerous occasions where the Gemara has to have a preclusion or exclusion, like by Yifat Toar, to tell you that's permitted even by eshedish of a goy. That seems to indicate that there's an isur there. The Baal Tosafot in the end say yes. So there is a restriction to a right of an isur asay, but there is no isur lav, and the institution of the Chachamim for the one who says that eshedish is a problem here was an eshedish midrabanan that would also allow for malkot in this case. Which goes to a more fundamental machloket as to these nashgan, Nashgaz. Rashi over here again suggests that they are because it could lead to problematic relationships or behaviors. On the other hand, in Sanhedrin, he says that they're inherently problematic because it's a mius and chilul Hashem. And the Yadro Mo there in Sanhedrin explains all of these issues as being issues that are inherently problematic, midrabanan, and not a restriction in order to prevent something problematic from happening. Ki gazru beit dino shel chashmonai bi'ah. The only thing they instituted about was intercourse between a Ben Israel and a Bat Goya, aval yichud lo, by being isolated together, being in seclusion together, was not instituted. Ba'atayinu v'gazru afilu yichud. They instituted yichud. Where it says, yichud nami beit dino shel David gazru. Yichud already comes from the time of David HaMelech. Tamar v'yuda bo'to sha'ah, after the incident with Amnon and Tamar, gazru al yichud. They put into place a restriction of yichud that they cannot be secluded together. Amre, Hatam Yichud the Bat Yisrael. Over there, the Beit Din of David was being made Yichud of a Bat Yisrael with a Jewish woman. Aval Yichud Dovadat Kochavim lo. They didn't institute it for non-Jewish women. Patuinu Gazru Afila Yichud Dovadat Kochavim. They came and instituted it for the Avodat Kochavim. Not only is it a problem to be secluded with a Jewish woman, it's a problem to be secluded with a non-Jewish woman. Yichud Bat Yisrael Doraiti. What do you mean? The Beit Din of David put in place Yichud. Yichud's a problem in the Torah. Dam Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Shimon ben Yehotzadak Remez LeYichud Min HaTorah Minayin. Where do you have a hint to this from the Torah? Shnemar Ki Yisitcha Achicha Ben Imecha. When they come to sway you or convince you to worship over the Zerah, it's Achicha Ben Imecha, your brother who's the son of your mother. Chi Ben Ein Mesid Ben Av Einu Mesid. Is it only a brother through your mother in the son of a mother that causes this swaying of individuals, but not that of a father? Ella comes to teach you, ben mitchehed imimo, a son is allowed to be secluded with his mother, ben achad mitchehed im kol arayot shebe Torah, but one is not allowed to be secluded with any one of the other arayot min Torah. Gemara says, ichudo right the eshet ish. Being secluded with a woman is only a problem when it's eshet ish min Torah. That's with a married woman. Vata David gazara filo yichud pnuya. David came along and instituted that even for single women, there'd be a problem of being secluded. And the reason to differentiate between a pnuya Israelite and a goya is because an Israelite could actually lead to real arayot, whereas by a goya, it could lead to problematic behavior, but not arayot. Or because a Israeli pnuya could actually be a nida, which would then be arayot min haTorah, which is not true by a goya. And that's why the Beit Din of David only instituted it with regards to a pnuya Israeli. And then the institution of the 18 takanot, amongst that was Yichud with a non-Jewish woman as well. Should just know that Rashi says over here, Demiachdava de lo garsinan, takes out a girsa here, and if you look in the Rabbeinu Hananel in the first wide line, he brings you what was the alternate girsa of the Gemara, which is that I'm reading, the Beitino shokhashmonai gazru, shalote ovedet kochavim miuchedet lo biznut, that the Gzeira, or the Takanav, the Beit Din of Chashmonaim, was that he may not take or interact with a woman on a continuous basis. Not through marriage, but have znut on a regular basis. He has a woman who he performs znut with all the time. Atu Inu, and then they came along, Gazru Afilu Ekrai Ba'alma. They came and instituted even for one-off basis that there's a problem of znut. And clearly the Rambam had the same gear as the Rabbeinu Hananel, because he paskins in Mishnah Torah, that im yichta lo biznut, if the Israel is miyache for himself a woman biznut, chayev aleh mishum nida, mishum shivcha, mishum goya, mishum zona. He quotes this institution of the Beit Din Shel Chashmonaim as being a case where he's miyache la biznut. Im lo yichta lo el nikret lo derech mikre, if it's not something that he does on a regular basis, but rather something that was happenstance or was a one-time affair, enu chayev aleh mishum goya, then you're only restricted because of goya, which, according to this version of the Girsa, would have been the Takana of Tamidei Hillel and Mishamai. Rashi probably rejected it from the Girsa because of the fact that the language by the Gzeirah Takana of the Beit Chashmonai was Haba al Avodet Kochavim, which makes it sound like that even if it was a one-time affair, that would be problematic. And it would similarly match up with that which was said by Habuel Aramit Kanaim Pogimba, which also seems to be even if it was just a one-time thing. It's also not so clear how the Gemara then continues into Yichud. My al davar acher mishum davar acher. The end of that statement, the Rav, they said they made it something for something else. So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Kazua Tinok Ove Kuchavim Shitma B'Ziva. That the takana was that non-Jewish boys would have the tumat zav from the moment that they are born, even though they're not relevant to the tumat ziva, which are the emissions that make a person tumay. So those emissions are inapplicable to a goy. Nevertheless, they assigned the tumah of that ziva to a non-Jewish boy from the time he's born, so that Jewish boys would not play with them because they're choshed on Mishkav Zachor, and that would be a preventative measure so that Ben Israel would not play with the Ben Oved Kochavim because of the fear of Mishkav Zachor. Dam Rabbi Zera, Tzar Gadol Ayeli Eitzel Rabbi Asi. I had a big issue when I was discussing this with Rabbi Asi. Rabbi Asi Eitzel Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Asi had this with Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan Eitzel Rabbi Yanai. The Rabbi Yanai Eitzel Rabbi Natan Ben Amram. Ben Rabbi Natan Ben Amram Eitzel Rabbi. So Tosafot claims that these were all Amoraim and up to Tanaim in the same generation, and they were all plagued by this issue. Tino Kovei Kochavim, Meimatai, Mitamei B'Ziva. when does this institution start? When are they considered to have this problem of ziva? V'amar li, and Rabbi said to me, ben yomo, from the day he's born, then he has this tuma. Ukshibati etzel Rabbi Chia, when I visited with Rabbi Chia, amar li ben tet shanim v'yom echad. That's only applicable to a child that's 9 years and one day, which is from the time that they then have a status of bi'ah. That's when you have the problem. Shibati etzeti divarai b'nei Rabbi. When I went back to Rabbi and told him what Rabbi Chia said, amar li hanach divarai, leave what I told you, v'achuz divi Rabbi Chia, and abide by what Rabbi Chia said. Damar tino kovei kochavim imatay mitamei b'ziva ben teisha shanim b'yom echad. That's correct, that we should only institute it from 9 years and one day, and not from the day of birth. Ho'il v'ra'ui l'biya mitamei nami b'ziva. Since he now has the ability or capacity to engage in biya and has a desire to do so, that's when they instituted the tuma in order to prevent the isolation or the playing between these different children. Sam Ravina Hilkach Haitinoket Overet Kochavim Bat Gimushanim Vyomakad Hovruyad Biya Mitama Nambi Biziva. So that would be the same thing then with the institution by the Tinoket, that should only apply when she reaches the age of 3 years and one day, because that's the point where she is Ruyad Biya, to make it parallel with the institution of the Ziva by the non Jewish boy. Where it says Pshita, that's a given. Maudutema Hayadala Argulule. You would have thought that the 9-year-old is got a sexual desire, and he's more guile and cunning, and therefore he can get what he wants. And that's why they instituted. A girl who's 3 years and one day doesn't have any of that. So even though she's re'uya the bi'ah, she's not one who's going to engage another party in that behavior. So you would have thought maybe it should only apply to a girl as well at the age of 9 years and one day. Kamash Malan, that is application from the re'uya the bi'ah, which was from 3 years in one day, and not 9 years in one day. Okay, we're going to stop here. 5 lines down on the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph.